This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:09 and now on to our daily COVID-19 numbers. Today, Malaysia recorded 13,034 positive cases. That's the second highest ever reported number. 25 of those cases are imported. Total number of positives now stand at 964,918. We've had 8,436 recoveries. Total number of recoveries now stand at 815,293, or 84.49% of all cases.
Meanwhile, active cases stand at 142,051. There are 938 people in the ICU, of which 459 require breathing assistance. There have also been 134 deaths. That brings the total number of deaths to 7,574, or 0.79% of all cases.
The Klang Valley recorded 7,760 cases. 6,049 of those are from Selangor. Johor recorded 791. Negeri Sembilan, 711.
Meanwhile, there were 32 new clusters, with 21 of those from the workplace. That brings the total number of clusters to 3,361, of which 946 remain active.
In terms of vaccinations, we've had 10.6 million administered single doses. Meanwhile, double doses stand at 4.9 million. Total number of doses administered so far, 15,517,866. That's it for updates from the Health Ministry. We will be bringing you these updates daily. It is now 7:10. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. Before we move on to our next story, just a quick look at some messages that we've been getting over the course of the show. So early on Inside Story, we were talking about the Olympics and we asked you, what do you think of them, whether they have meaning for you still? And we have this message from Li Ling, which is quite a lovely one.
So Li Ling says, "This Olympics, I'm celebrating more female representation. Way to go, girls. I hope this encourages more girls to take up sports and to know that the sky is their only limit."
And really, I think that speaks to the positives of something like the Olympics, right? The kind of inspiration that they can deliver. And on that note, we have David just simply saying, "No Bolt," with a sad face emoji.
But there may be another. I think that's the beauty of the Olympics, right? The fact is that Usain Bolt was an Olympic star, and he was that because he was a new face to us. So let's celebrate new faces. And like new heroes, there are always new heroes every Olympics.
Absolutely. And early on, Keep in View, speaking of inspirational, actually, we spoke about a 72-year-old person who has decided
Zainal Abidin.
That's right, who has taken it into his own hands to help train newcomers to his industry. And we have this message from Maggie.
Maggie says, "Kudos to these veterans who are not kedekut ilmu. To hear Sean's opinion that the paid lecturers should be giving more guidance has reassured me that I wasn't being calculative when I insisted that my daughter get the answers from her lecturers. I may have been able to handle primary school or even some secondary level education questions, but college and beyond is out of my scope. In moments of frustration because of the rising tension of not being able to help with assignments, I posed the question to my daughter that if I could provide the answers and questions, I would have schooled her at home myself and saved the college expenses for a nice holiday overseas. But sadly, there are no checks and controls in our present education system, regardless of whether it's the public or private education sector."
Maggie, all of those are such good points. And I really just wanted to say that I think what that highlights is the need for more mentorship and need for a clearer path, really, in terms of where students can get guidance as they move on. So keep those thoughts coming on any of the things that we're talking about today, really. You can WhatsApp, you can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And related to really that last message, coming up after this, we're looking at challenges that students are facing when it comes to choosing what to do after their SPM. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
It is 7:14. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. And now we're moving on to looking at students, specifically post-SPM students, and the challenges that they are facing when it comes to deciding what to do after the SPM, particularly given that they've just gone through a pandemic.
Yeah, you know, it's a tricky time in your life at the best of times, even when you've gone through reasonably smooth sailing with secondary school, right? But that's not been the case for our most recent batch of SPM students. The SPM, for instance, was actually postponed twice due to COVID-19. It was supposed to happen last year. Instead, it was held between February till March of this year. Despite that, we have seen an improvement in terms of results of this year's SPM batch, which I really think is an amazing credit to students and teachers. And with that, then, I think having gone through that, thinking about the next step is perhaps even more complex.
It's complex because you're at that age where everyone has advice. No one has specific solutions. And you're so torn by this idea of what do I want to do? And this is going to lock me into doing something for the next 50 years of my life. And that's a daunting task to take on. I just wanted to very quickly read this message from Twitter. And they said, I knew what I didn't want to study. So I narrowed it down by elimination. And I think that kind of speaks to the challenges of having to make this decision. And so that's exactly what we want to talk about now. And we'd like to hear from you. Did you know what you wanted to study after SPM? You can call us 77732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, joining us to help, I suppose, shed some light on how that decision might be made is Dr. James Edward Walsh, who's the director of the Center for Pre-University at International Medical University, or IMU. Dr. James, thank you for being with us today.
Hello, good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me on. Great introduction.
Thank you. Now, what do you think students should be considering when they plan to further their studies?
Okay, well, apart from the what you mentioned as the process of elimination method, I think most people, they have a desired career. When they were growing up, they had an uncle or an aunt who was a doctor or was an engineer or a business person and inspired them. Or they may have had friends or elder siblings who are already doing dentistry or science or whatever it might be. And they might have said, oh, I like their career. I like what they're doing. So they should have something in their heart, you know, what they want to be. Imagine that day when they eventually graduate in 4 or 5 years and their parents are so proud of them in that auditorium. And that's a driver to get them over the difficult period during their studies, because university can be tough. Also, they need to look back on their school grades. So if, for example, they want to be a scientist and their science grades are excellent, then that's a good thing. If their science grades are not so good, then they know that they're going to have to work super hard when they go to university to make up any ground that they lost in school. And many students do improve their grades in sciences or in business, etc. So do a forensic examination of your grades, what you like studying. There will always be subjects that you don't favor in any degree course, and you'll just have to be a bit tenacious with those. But you should like most of the students most of the time and most of the teachers most of the time and the environment you're going to be in. Because in order to achieve your grades, you need to be settled and comfortable in your studying environment. So, for example, in school, I can remember when I went to school, I was brought to school by my parents. I didn't choose what school, and I was thrown in the door, and that was it for 12 years, and I emerged at the far side. And it was a wonderful school, but you're going to choose your university, so choose it based on your dream, your career dream, and the environment you want to study in. That would be my advice. It will make the studying easier if you're content.
And do you think that the pandemic has affected these considerations at all in terms of trying to pick the right institution, the right course?
I think in terms of online teaching, etc., obviously certain courses lend themselves well to online teaching and others need more hands-on. But all of the universities have adapted well, and there's fantastic innovations with IT and artificial intelligence that make the virtual hands-on experience almost as good as the real thing. So they shouldn't be afraid of that. And the evidence from my university is, my course is, that the grades for students who are fully online, being taught fully online since last year, the average grade is similar to those that were face-to-face. So if the university gets the online teaching right and maintains its standards and doesn't have grade inflation or deflation, obviously both are bad, then there's theoretically nothing wrong with the online environment.
What would you say are the most important elements to look out for when exploring your pre-university options?
Okay, great question. So first of all, acceptance. Don't do a foundation in science if you want to do business, and don't do a foundation in business if you want to do science. It's that simple. Find out what the university requires in terms of your prerequisites. Do they require you to have a certain number of B's or A's in your SPM or IGCSE? Then, if you choose a certain pre-U course, OSMAT or A-level or foundation in science, what they require you to score, an average of an A or a B or a C, and make sure that those targets are targets that you're comfortable. So acceptance is the first thing. Duration. If you are super hardworking and you've got great grades in your SPM, then you can do a pre-university course that might be a one-year duration, like matriculasi or foundation in science. Or you might remain on in school and do A-levels in a school-based environment for 2 years. You essentially accumulate very similar amounts of knowledge, similar amounts of chemistry and biology in the case of science, but you assimilate it in a different way over a different timescale. In fact, many students now are not even going to formal education for programs like A-level. They go to tuition centers and homeschool, study at home, and then they register for these exams when they're ready to go. There's no formal semester, etc. Other courses like Foundation in Science have a semesterized system. It's structured. It's a facsimile of undergraduate, so it prepares you for the rigors of undergraduate in how it's taught in terms of assessment and exam. Some pre-U's are exam only, some are assessment and exam. So I looked at our medical program, and we accept students from, I think, up to 14 different national and international foundation courses. So what you need to consider is day one, when you're sitting in that degree, day one in medicine or engineering, do you have the same or similar skill sets from your foundation or pre-U course as all the other guys and girls in your class? So make sure you're well prepared. All of the pre-U courses are excellent. They just have a different methodology, slightly different knowledge base, but they all prepare you well. The universities wouldn't accept them if they didn't. So don't do a pre-U course that doesn't prepare you well for your chosen degree.
So this is something that I often think about. How can we plan for a future career when the nature of work itself is changing so dramatically? How can students account for this in choosing the right course?
Yeah, well, obviously some careers will lend themselves well to work from home. And you read banking and the big business industries are planning to get rid of their offices and just have hot desks for staff who come in. And working from home in those industries could be permanent. It's a big saving for these industries. But if it's a hands-on career like engineering and medicine and dentistry, where you have to see patients, build bridges and so forth, then there's going to have to be a hands-on dimension. So that can't change. So certain careers will change radically, I will say, in terms of where you are when you're working. And for example, if it involves marketing and traveling a lot all around the world, you will be doing that from home on Zoom, like I am here with you. And I saw an interesting article where this businessman said that he used to fly around the world and see clients, and now he's doing it all on Zoom, and he's seeing, it was some phenomenal number, 100 times more clients a year than he did by flying around the world. So for him, it's a great benefit. But in terms of seeing patients as a health scientist, you've got to be there on the ground. So some of these more traditional hands-on careers will change, obviously, but they won't change that much. But there are AI, you can consult with your doctor on Zoom now. You don't have to go to the clinic. They're even performing operations using robotics. The surgeon is in one continent and you're in another continent, which sounds worrying, but it works. So technology will change the nature of careers, not just because of the pandemic, but it's been happening all the time. It's just accelerated somewhat now.
So that's it. The pandemic poses a few, I think, more pressing challenges right now, because if, as for many people, the plan might be to pursue higher education abroad, what are the challenges of going through that right now? What's the process of furthering one's studies abroad in the middle of a pandemic?
Well, obviously, it depends in the short term on the COVID status of the country. Are they on a red list or an amber list? And are their borders open? And can you come home for the holidays? Is Malaysia returning students from those countries? But students are going abroad and they are quarantining. and all of these countries do want international students. So the doors are still open, but they're open in a different way. We have international students who have completed our foundation in science course who have never been in Malaysia. I mean, they started last April 2020, and they've completed the whole course from their home country. Hopefully things will open up and they can come here for their degree, obviously. So, you know, you can do it online, but so we have adapted to that. So you need to consider that. If you're an international student, you may do your course fully from your home country if that's allowed by the university. So changes are happening for the better. People perceive that online teaching is a negative thing. It's a second-class version of face-to-face. It's not. It's just a different type of teaching. And in my view, it's here. It's with us to stay in one form or other, long term.
And in general, if we think about twinning programs as a whole, what advice would you have? What needs to be taken into account?
Okay, well, the key one is acceptance. So if I get on an airplane and go directly to a university in, say, Australia, and I finish a degree, let's say medicine, for example, and then I say, okay, I want to be a doctor in Australia for 10 years, but I'd like to eventually come home and practice my medicine in my home country. Is that degree accepted back in Malaysia? Can you do your professional exams? Is the door open for you to return? Can you do your housemanship in Malaysia, etc.? Or are you locking yourself out of a return to Malaysia? If your dream is to go to America and be a dentist or a scientist or an engineer, but the first stepping stone is to go to my country, let's say Ireland, for example, and is Ireland a stepping stone for America? Do students do their primary degree in, say, Ireland, and then go on to do their postgraduate in America and become a doctor or a scientist or an engineer or a business person in America? So check out, get information from people, not on the phone, not, okay, no problem, we can do that. It's your career. It's going to cost you a lot of money. You know, people can't say canla on the phone about your career. It has to be in writing. Yes, if you do this, this, and this, and you achieve this, and this grades, you will be able to do this, and this. It's very important to speak to the right people and get sound, honest advice. And I advise students, obviously, coming to my own university, but I frequently have parents who contact me and say, my son or daughter wants to go and do something completely different. And I'll still give them the same advice as an educationist, you know. So get advice from the right people and get it in writing from the institute in question so they don't change the rules. When you're finished your four-year degree, you find out, uh-oh, they've changed the rules and the door is closed. So that's my advice. It's a very important decision. Then there are more simple social things like, the language in the country. Do you speak Mandarin if you're going to Beijing to university? The accent, if you're going to one of our partner schools in Scotland, can you understand the Scottish accent? Okay, because the lecturers are going to be spoken in Scottish English or Irish English like mine. The culture, what are the people like? And even the weather. If you don't like cold weather, don't go to Siberia to do your degree.
You mentioned finances earlier, and I think that's obviously an important concern. Has the pandemic made private higher education more costly, but also in a larger sense, what sorts of financial options can students explore?
I'm not the financial officer, but in terms of the value for money for your fees, I know just speaking personally from my own staff, they have worked super hard to make online teaching work. And we constantly get feedback from the students and recalibrate it because it's new. The more traditional methods, we were sure they worked. So getting feedback from the students is very important. In terms of value for your fees, as a parent myself, I don't see any difference. Providing you get the grades and you achieve the degree, there's really no difference. Apart from, obviously, if you have to do hands-on things, which, as I said earlier, we are making fantastic steps in improving that. And, all degrees will eventually adapt to the new normal of what we call dual mode, face-to-face and online. So universities, by their nature, should be adaptable in order to help the students, you know.
So we have just about a minute left with you. In closing, what advice would you like to offer students and their families as they look to take this next step?
Okay. So when you leave school, your social dimension is in school. It's been defined by that. When you go to university, you need a good work-life balance. You need to study hard to get value from your fees. Just paying the fees doesn't get you the education. It involves lots of hard work. But it's very important to engage in the social dimension of the university. And we have lots of social dimension online, Kahoot quizzes and games, etc. So make sure that you have a good work-life balance, because if you're work all day long and you have no friends and you're studying till 4 in the morning, you'll eventually suffer in your grades. If your social life is too active, then your grades will suffer. So what I would say is get a work-life balance and be self-led. Teacher is not there to hold your hand anymore. You need to be the leader in your education. And we spend a lot of time in my university teaching students to be self-led and independent, because it's your education, you're choosing it.
Dr. James, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
That was Dr. James Edward Walsh, director of the Center for Pre-University at IMU, speaking to us about how to choose your path after SPM. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.